Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio on this Friday evening, the 12th of February, 2016. My name is James Holloway, and I'm your host, and I am joined by the host of this particular program. His name is Imam Alfred Muhammad. He does a program called Religion Means Alive. Good evening, Imam Muhammad.
Good evening to you, Brother James, and good evening to our audience. And I remember one of the famous talk show hosts of New York in the 70s and 80s, Bob Lowe, you said, I respect you. And he called it the I Respect You movement. I really missed that show. And I kind of patterned myself after that show. Advocacy journalism, it has gone not the route I necessarily wanted it to go. It has taken on a kind of sectarian model, but which I don't want. But I want this to be a talk show for African-Americans from Rio de Janeiro to Halifax and Nova Scotia, those of us who have been displaced here in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, that's quite a wide net, and I really appreciate you saying that. You know, oftentimes, and I can say this off mic, we talk about a lot of subject matter, you and I in particular, and there's some things that are really dear to your heart and close to your thinking in all manners of speaking. And one of the things that you talk about in a word is healing in the African-American community. Please speak to us about your feelings at this time.
Yes. When we came to the Western Hemisphere, and I'm going to speak in particular about those of us who were brought to North America, the 2,000 by 3,000 mile prison called North America, and I'm going to include our Mexican, our African-American, what we call the Garifunas, but I'm going to particularize around Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, those in the southern state. We were broken. It took years and years, 400 years to break us. Not that they could ever break our human spirit and our determination, as evidenced by Nat Turner and Gable Prosner, Denmark Vesey, and others. But what had happened is our culture was broken. Our religion was taken away from us. Our traditions were taken away from us. Our manhood forming organizations. And because we, many of us came here, we were from the Mandes, great, strong warriors. We call them Mandingos. So what I have realized is that it's symptomatic when we see lack of businesses, when we see lack of schools, when we see lack of cultural institutions, when we see us begging the Democrats, the Republicans, the Independents to politicalize us, to actually give us political power. That cannot come about from the outside. It has to come from the inside. And I have been about the mission of psychically freeing us. Because once I'm psychically freed, I'm going to look for a person that looks like me, that acts like me, and think like me, and walk like me. And we're going to have a movement.
Mm-hmm. I see. You know, again, healing is such an apropos a word in all that we talk about. Let's look at the family. We're going to take it step by step in this conversation and during this program because we want a lot of people to kind of move toward their phones, their smartphones, their Androids, so forth and so on. And, of course, tell friends about what is taking place on this particular show. Once again, my name is James Holloway, and I just want to communicate to all because you're saying, well, where did this guy come from? Well, I was actually put on the spot. We won't go there, but we want to talk in terms of, we said, healing and also connecting that to family. And we're talking with the host of this particular program, Imam Alfred Muhammad. The name of the program is called Religion Means Alive, and we're going to expand on that concept called religion also. Once again, Mr. Muhammad, Dr. Muhammad, We love you so much. You know, you have a lot of forenames, if I could say this. The family, how does this factor into healing here in 2016 in particular?
Well, Barry, I hate to be a scholar and reference books, but I'd like to reference this. The great Amos Wilson, Dr. Amos Wilson, and the great Dr. Francis Kress Wesselman, they both had written on this subject, and many others have written on the subject. There's a non-African-American named John Bradshaw. He's written a book called The Family. We are basically man and woman when they come on this earth. They are influenced by their mother and father. Well, mother spirit was broken. our women couldn't really be full mothers because they were slaves. They try. Our men couldn't be real fathers because father means you feather, you can protect your family. So there's a lot of subconscious anger on the part of the African-American women that we haven't been able to protect them. They were raped in front of us. Our daughters were raped and humiliated in front of us. One of the first things they did when they brought them on the ship was to take them up to the high deck and let the powerful chiefs and judges and great leaders and governors witness the rape of our women. So this has been in us genetically, predisposition to being knocked out, knocked down, and dragged out, then lynched and terrorized. So, you know, America can talk about terrorism. The first victims of terrorism was us, and that terror and trauma is still with us. So it has to start with a healing. It starts with first the recognition, the actual connection to that kind of pain, and then the process of healing from that pain.
Now, also, that is connected to our social environment, the environments that we bring our children up into, how we express ourselves in that environment, and the connection to the larger of ourselves, to the community in particular. Speak to that.
Yes, it is right. If I would say that my grandmother, and this is not some far-fetched, my grandmother was an actual slave. She remembers the day that Lee surrendered. That's how she would respond. Say, Granny, how old are you? She said, I was born 4 years after Lee surrendered, meaning the ending of the Civil War. But she probably was much older than that because she had a clear memory of it. Now, my granny, my maternal grandmother, was beaten, saw her mother, Amanda Nallen. And Nallen was the plantation they lived on, because the slaves didn't have any names. That's the fact, they were stripped of their names, and they were Johnson, if they were on the Johnson plantation. They didn't give them a name. They took that name of the last plantation they were on when the Freedmen's Bureau came into existence. So they told us about getting beaten, or her mother being beaten, hands being put in the fire, and she was a victim of rape. So I don't consider Mr. Jefferson to be the father of this country. I consider him to be a rapist and a child molester. Now, I know that's very controversial, but that's a fact. A slave has no permission to have sex. If you have sex, one were to have sex with a prisoner, you would be locked up and charged with rape. So why don't we treat that as people who have been victims of rape and trauma and address those problems? So I'm here to heal that. I've been a teacher, and practitioner of spiritual psychotherapy for nearly 50 years. And I know until the patient or the client or the person can address what has caused their current behavior, is nowhere in the world they would be able to be healed.
Wow. Now, there's a lot of fever and fervor, if you will, in this political season that we have now entered into. There's talk of Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump and a whole host of others who many believe are coming to, if you will, do something to help African-Americans and, of course, the country at large. But as we speak to the issue of the African-American population, what is your view on the political landscape right now in terms of do these candidates have our best interests, as you see it now, in terms of as they jockey for a position to go to the greatest house, if you will, in this country and perhaps some say the world? Or is it just a continuation of the same old, same old?
Well, you cannot have political power in America unless you're a group, and we're not a group. We are 40 the million or more sprung together, but we don't even have a neighborhood. We don't even have block associations. So how can we have any political power? We don't have political power. You don't have political power if all you do is vote. You have political power if you have three things. First, money, property. Two, think tanks, political organizations that are supported by you, then you have political power. Political power is when people come to you and say, Mr. James, Mr. Ndugu, Mr. Holloway, who should we run for office? That's political power. When someone comes to you after they decide to run for office, they're essentially using you. So we have never had any real political power because we've never been organized as a people. There's over 41 million of us. We by now should have a $2 billion political action fund of our own, which politically educates us, that mobilizes us, and represents us to bargain for our vote. And also, I forgot to add, a think tank where you write your own legislation. You know, one of the legislations I would be for would be a legislation to say that African-American neighbors should be free zones, similar to the Indian land. Well, that won't sell politically now. I think these zones should be left to be governed by us, and we should be free from. But if we had enough political power, we could get those things to happen. Well, certainly one of the things that should be on the table at some point once we are organized is reparations. I don't think we should seek reparations now because I don't think we're mentally in shape for reparations. But at some point, that should be on the table. Those are political issues for us. You know, but what I see now, it's a recycling. It's Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. I don't believe Mr. Trump is going to win. I think the powers that be is going to knock him down. I think he got enough skeletons in his closet to kill somebody. We don't know what Mr. Sanders would do. I don't agree with John Lewis, the Honorable Congressman Reverend John Lewis. Mr. Sanders has been around for many years. Mr. Sanders has an ideology. He's been around longer than Hillary Clinton has been in the movement, and I'm not endorsing Mr. Sanders. Senator Sanders, Ms. Clinton has been around operating at the Children's Defense Fund, but most of her life has been spent working for the Walmart as an attorney for the Rose Law Firm. So her interest is corporate America. Mr. Senator Sanders is interested in business. Is interested in movement. Donald Trump is interested in being a showman. The rest goes on and on and on. None of these people can have our interests in heart if we don't have our own interests in heart.
Wow. Now, if history is first and foremost part and parcel of continuity, let's look, if you will, at the benefits of the civil rights movement from the point of origin in terms of our life stream and lifespan up until this point. What were the benefits and what do you see as the liabilities or deficits at this particular time?
Of the civil rights movement?
Yes, of the civil rights movement in terms of its connection to the relationship of continuity. In other words, everything that we're talking about right now has a relationship to the civil rights movement. Okay?
I think that we even got shafted in the civil rights movement. I think that Harold Cruz has a very powerful book, the most important book he's written among three very important works, was Poor But Equal. And in it, he talks about the origin of the civil rights movement. Truth be told, we never really engineered the civil rights movement. It was engineered for us by others. And the plans for it and where the destiny is. You know, there's an old song that we used to sing, "Oh, I wish I knew what it is to be free." We never come up with our own idea of what freedom is. So therefore, it's been vague, it's been some legalisms, it's been some voting rights, it's been a lot of different things, but it's never been defined. Consequently, when what we call the post-civil rights era, no African-American hospitals, probably in African-American colleges, the only thing we have left right now among us that really sort of semi-independent is African-American churches and mosques. And even many African-American mosques today are controlled by immigrants, if not immigrant thinking. So we are more enslaved, more in prison, more mentally impoverished in the middle of probably $2.1 trillion in income, and we are more powerless than we've ever been in the history of our existence here.
Now, some might say, let's look at something, and I'm going to bring the Harold Cruz book back into focus for a second. There's something called non-economic liberalism that he identified in this book. Can you speak to the audience about that particular idea and concept? I think it's a beautiful concept in terms of
we should have freedom to go to a restaurant. But no freedom to own a restaurant. It means that we should have freedom to go into other people's neighborhoods, but no freedom to develop our neighborhood. So it gives us all the liberty without any money. In other words, go to a restaurant with no money. You got to borrow, beg, or perhaps even steal to get what you want. You know, that means that you don't have a chain of supermarkets. You got to go and beg, shop Wise, shop right, or somebody to feed you. You got to go and beg somebody to let you shop there. That's not freedom. That's actually another form of economic and social slavery. You got to beg somebody at Hollywood to give you an award to tell you about your life. So we're always on the outside looking in. We don't have our own inside. And it starts with us first being internal and visualizing and actualizing what our existence should be.
Now, you speak to an idea from time to time. But I think
Excuse me, just one minute.
It's another. Yeah, go right ahead. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio on this Friday evening. My name is James Holloway, and I'm sitting on this side of the microphone. And usually you will hear Imam Alfred Muhammad on talking to you directly on a whole host of subject matters. And the name of his program is called Religion Means a Lie. I'm with him this evening, and we're just perusing a number of issues and ideas and hashing out some things. And hopefully you'll join us very shortly and become a part of what we're doing and provide your opinion, give your opinion as to what you think and what you believe we need to be doing, we as African-American folks in particular, and as we think in terms of our children, our loved ones, moms, dads, uncles, aunts, so forth and so on. You know, as many people say, it's, you know, we've got to do something. There is something to be done, a lot to be done, local level, on an internal level, as Imam Alfred Muhammad has been talking about throughout this discussion. And this is the only way that things begin to work, begin to gel, begin to manifest. We have to work from inside out in order to be to show ourselves, if I may use a biblical term, to show ourselves approved. Okay? Once again, a Friday evening with you. I thank you for joining us and being a part of what we're doing. Blog Talk Radio is what you're listening to. Imam Alfred Muhammad?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I want to go back again, and I want to touch upon a couple other things. I'm going to go to Harold Cruz's earlier book, The Crisis of the Negro Intellectual. Okay, you have some things that you want to discuss in terms of how the intellectual coming out of our community, in many instances, what has been kind of a way that they have faltered. Not to blame them, because it's not just simply blaming anyone, but to look at what we as intellectuals are really talking about, speaking about, communicating. Speak to us about that.
Yes, well, I think one of the serious problems, the major problem is, the intellectuals, even of Clark's time, was in I mentioned Kenneth Clark, but those intellectuals, E. Franklin Frazier's, the people in Crisis of the Negro Intellectual, were at least engaged in community life. The Hope Stevens and others, they were engaged. John Henry Clark, they were actually engaged. Today, the intellectuals are not in our community. They're primarily at universities, and most of them are, in fact, into more a life of the mind, as they call it. It is learning for learning's sake, or they are, as some of our great intellectuals, into the idea of condemning the plutocrats, as Professor Cornel West, a dear friend of mine, says, but yet he was teaching at Princeton, a $25 billion endowed institution, or at Union Theological Seminary. He's not laboring in the vineyard of Howard University, Claflin, or one of those places where he's needed. He's on a perch. So that's a problem already. He who feeds you calls the shots. So these men are disengaged. So what we have, the Preston Wilcox, the Amos Wilson, the other great intellectuals, even Cruz, had to leave Harlem because we wouldn't support him. He ended up in the University of Michigan. I'm glad he did, and we became good friends. But that's a problem for us. Again, you have to support intellectuals. We should have our own think tanks. I think we have the Center for Joint Political Studies, but that's not even supported by us. We're people that feel that you must beg others to do for us that which we can do for ourselves. And that's why I'm going to be at the Savior's Day, February the 20th, at the Robert Treat Hotel, because I'm going to discuss it. We need saviors. We need Ndugu to be a savior. We need Brother so-and-so to be a savior, Sister so-and-so to be a savior. We have to save ourselves. Not others, not Senator Sanders or Secretary Clinton or others, John Edwards or whatever Caucasian we are looking to, even whatever African-American politician. And I'm not here to beat up on President Obama. I love him. But President Obama was put in office by others, not by us. And we get mad because he didn't follow our policy. We didn't put the policy in. We didn't put him in. I love him dearly. And I give him a lot of slack, because he did the very best with what he was given.
Wow. Very well said. Let's look at another aspect of our community in terms of the artists, music artists, recording artists. What role should they play in the dynamics of what goes on in our community on an everyday basis, as well as how they display and present their art?
Well, they should be. It's a cautionary tale. Bill Cosby's cautionary tale. Why I say cautionary tale? Those people are signed by record companies, and most of the entertainment people don't have our best interests at heart. They're basically there to poison us, destroy them. So if a person breaks the agreement with them, they can get punished. Man, I happen to know about a lot of stuff that goes on in Hollywood and in the entertainment industry. If some of the people that we look up to, if their lives were exposed, they would be locked up. Well, I don't need to talk to you about Woody Allen. But when Dr. Cosby decided to speak out and decided to buy NBC, all of a sudden he found himself under indictment. So that's a problem for us. That's one cautionary tale. But the other aspect of it is we have never built cultural institutions since Arthur Michaud. We have never built a cultural institution since the Negro Baseball League. We need to come up with that. We need to build our own institutions where we can put our artists in. We need to have a marriage between business people and artists so we can make money out of our own culture. And we all got to understand that there are markets outside the United States. We got a burgeoning cultural market here. Man, imagine if we were to spend money, the money we spend in to finance these other people, if we built our own entertainment, our own movie, have a movie about Brother Ndugu, have a movie about Fannie Lou Hamer, and she becomes the hero. Sisters want to act like Fannie Lou Hamer instead of like Beyonce.
Wow.
And I knew Fannie Lou Hamer, and she was something to want to be like, too. I set her at feet.
Yeah, very, very much so. I'm going to identify a figure in our history. We're celebrating his particular understanding and relationship to history, and that's Carter G. Woodson. There are a lot of young people out there in the listening audience who really don't know who this brother and this individual who made such an impact on our experience as we speak, particularly as it pertains to the miseducation of the Negro. Speak to us about Dr.
Oh, God, you want a book on it, or you want just me a 2-minute comment?
First of all, let's tell you the biography
of Carter G. Woodson.
I know you can take us the way you need to take us, but please provide us
with Carter G. Woodson happens to be from my home county, Buckingham,
really?
My father's home county, it's to be dealt with, to be exact. The most fascinating thing about Dr. Carter G. Woodson was that he didn't go to high school until he was about 25 years old. So he was already formed as a independent African-American. Finished college at Berea at about 29, went to Harvard at 29. He was a human being. He was formed. He'd worked in the mines. So his love, his aspirations came from us. And I believe that was divine hand. unlike W.E.B. Du Bois, who was formed differently. And I'm not here to critique Du Bois. He's a great man without great things. Here's the difference. When Carnegie Wilson went to the university, he already was an African-American up from slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So he had questions that was relating to that. And the seat of the problem, he identified as the heritage of slavery. But here's what he did for me that I've just recently looked up to and trying to internalize it, how to make a living. And that's what most of our intellectuals haven't done, including me, is known how to make a living. This Carnegie Wilson was a practical thinker, a PhD from Harvard in history, a great thinker, independent. When they fired him from Dunbar High School, West Virginia State University, he went and founded his own institution that is still in existence today, and I have to join that organization, the Association for the Study of Negro Life and Culture. That's a powerful thing. Powerful that, in fact, we are celebrating this month as a result of Dr. Wilson. So and I want to say this to our audience, a lot of our Muslims are listening. Imam Muhammad said Dr. Wilson's work was so powerful that had we studied that, we would achieve the same results that the Nation of Islam achieved for us and breaking the trance. See, we as a people have been traumatized, and as a result of that trauma, we have been in a trance. And that trance, psychologists tell us, is a person-to-person trance. We're walking, 40 million people walking to and fro in a 2,000-mile by 3,000 prison. And Dr. Wilson says that if you tell the Negro to go to the back door, if he can't find one, he will create one. And haven't we done that? We've gone from this one to that one to that one, always looking for a second place in somebody else's stage, on somebody else's stage.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it was just sad to see John Lewis.
Wow.
I mean, it was sad. I could cry to see him act like a beggar. I'm not even proud of those African Americans of Cornell West who beat up on President Obama, but yet is running behind Senator Sanders like a little child because he patted him on the head. That's a sick person. We're looking for someone to oppress us, someone to free us. That's a childlike state. That's the seat of the problem.
Hmm. Wow. As you speak about these ideas coming from Dr. Carnegie Wilson and others, you reminding me of another brother who has since left us by the name of the Destruction of Black Civilization.
Yes, Dr. Chancellor Williams.
So profound. I mean, he laid out such an awesome account of what we need to do to rectify our situation on a economic, social, political level in terms of the master plan that comes out of that particular book.
Yes.
And I'd like for you, because you are studied, well-learned in that regard, just identify some of the points that Dr. Chancellor Williams discussed.
Well, Dr. Williams talked, first of all, about the invaders that came into West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And those people who came from the Sahel who never had our interests at heart. And basically, we're people who have identified with others rather than ourselves. And one of the weaknesses of West Africa was that they never even developed confederations. And the poor Igbos who were right there on the river just snatched up and brought to America. It's my suspicion that the reason we are so Baptist-oriented is because we came from the Igbo, the river states. And we never had the sense of forming strong communities, strong defense forces, strong alliances to prevent invaders. Now, there were other problems in the center of West Africa, and the great Walter Rodney has written a very phenomenal book called The History of the Upper Guinea Coast from 1600. I think it's a little bit more profound than Dr. Williams. I think Dr. Williams is going into a lot more philosophy. But we need to look at the internal rot that took place in West Africa. And a lot of it was a bad misuse of the religion of Islam. And I have to say that, honestly. And Dr. Williams mm-hmm. also addressed that. Of course, he addressed it more from the external. I would say when you examine Walter Rodney, you examine it from the internal.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have is a problem today. We have one leader wants to be over everybody. And we have never since really developed full-fledged democracies, meaning that Brother Ndugu has a right to his opinion, but not a right to destroy everybody. Imam Alfred has an opinion, but we have to have leaders. But we also have to have consensus, and that has mm-hmm. to be developed. And we have always had a strong leader. And when that strong leader is knocked off or killed or drugged or whatever, we're gone. But we have to have an ideology that holds us together. And we need to work towards what that ideology is. And we still have to do what our people have not done, is to tell us what it really means to be free. They said, oh, I wish I knew what it was to be free. That question is still begging.
Well, now, early on in the program, you identified one sister who is recently passed on, who is and has been such a significant figure on a psychological level in terms of her understanding of the African mind, if you will, and that is Dr. Frances Cress Wellesley.
Yes, Dr. Frances Cress Wellesley, as our audience should know, was a very powerful psychiatrist. And she had a great epiphany, and she studied psychiatry and was really traditional Freudian in her analysis. But she began to ponder, and I believe that she was influenced heavily by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in the ISIS papers, is that she began to see that the internal issues that Caucasians had with us, it was a penis envy, it was a melanin envy, color envy, and they worked. They came into West Africa and saw bathhouses and saw great kingdoms and government, and it just drove them crazy. And they came back and plotted, and then you and I ended up here. So I think she should be given a great salute, and I'd like to have a panel on another time that when we have her books, maybe we can start a program we just dedicate to reading and discussing her, because she should be immersed. We should be immersed in her thinking. It would go a long ways to healing the envy, the jealousy, the hatred. And she has a whole set of things we shouldn't say. We call each other bitches and niggers and dogs. As long as we say that, we're not going to go anywhere. Because even the scripture says, so as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. You know, you get people dressing around today, running around today, dressed in Arab clothes. If you dress in Arab clothes, eat like an Arab, and think like an Arab, you're going to be an Arab. Only you're going to be a black rab. If you act like a Pakistani, you're Blackistani, you're going to be a Blackistani. If you act like white folk, you're going to be a Blackite. You're not going to be a white man, you're not going to be a black man. You're just going to be a very sick, deranged person. And that's what we have populating our community today. And that's the job of religion means alive, is to bring an end to that kind of self-destruction of our great civilization that should be within us.
Wow. Dr. Muhammad, we have, Imam Muhammad, we have reached the halfway point of this particular program. I think it would be wise of us to have others enter into this discussion if they feel like they want to call in, they have something to say, not only something to say, but we want you to communicate to us this evening as we have this kind of family roundtable, if you will. Yes, it's Dr. Muhammad and myself talking and communicating and what have you, but we would love to hear from you. And can we give out those numbers at this time, Dr. Muhammad?
Oh, absolutely. It's 805-727-7013. I see my great friend that I was trying to reach earlier, Imam Mubashir Akhtar, a powerful warrior out of North Carolina, Durham to be exact. I think we should start using our homelands as our home base as our homeland. I know he lives in Brooklyn, within the Garden State. So if he wished to comment or any others that may be on the line, all you got to do is press 1 on your phone. We want to hear from you. We want to hear questions, comments, statements, whatever you have, complaints. This is Religion Means Alive. So anyone was on and maybe on by browser can just dial 805-727-7013. Don't be shy. The lines are open. Doesn't cost you a penny to call in.
Mm. Great. And also, you know, as we were talking about Dr. Welsing, one of her mentors, Dr.
Oh, yes, we have the brother on
also
the line.
Made a great
Yes, sir. We have
impact.
The great Imam Mubashir, one of the freedom fighters in the tradition of Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman. He's combined them all together. Also, one of the foremost supporters, students, and teachers of Imam Wahabuddin Muhammad. He doesn't have a foreign bone in his body. Brother Imam Mubashir. You know, you were supposed to host the show today. You didn't know that. I tried to send a message to you telepathically, but couldn't get you, so we got you anyway.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Imam. Man, I was listening to you on the road, Brother Imam. You was all, Brother Imam, you know, when me and you were riding out to Chicago, we had a long time, man, that time. You and me and your little son, Joe, we rode out there together. You was the guest speaker for the Patriotism Day, Brother Imam. And that,
yes,
you know, a lot of our leaders forgot about that. They really is not aware of how, and Imam Muhammad, he said we the new Americans, man. We the new patriots. That, he didn't say that for no reason at all. You know, all of these things make people. And what you were hitting on, Brother Imam, this psychosis we have, this psychology that they use on us, and we still traveling and can't get up out of, it is because we have leaders, Brother Imam. And they had played a tape the other day on one of these shows, and the Imam, the subject was Islam, the present, the past, and the future in America, Brother Imam. In
yes,
America.
Sir.
Imam made that important. Islam, the past, the present, and future in America. And when we start look at the religion of how it got started in America, Brother Imam, that's a history among a people that belongs to the family tree of Africa. People that were brought out of Africa, dropped off in South America, Central America, the West Indian Island, and the United States here of America. It's no coincidence that these wise Christian people, Jews, when they looked at this history of Islam in America, you and I was part of that, Brother Mel. You was the FOI. I was,
yes,
too, Brother Mel. And these people know, here we have a group of ex-slaves who have been mistreated worse than any people on the face of the planet Earth. They hear one of their kinds stand up in the 1930s and call them out of the system that was given to them, imposed upon them, and they call that system Christianity. Now, we know that we don't talk about it. It's not, don't have anything to do with Jesus Christ, peace be upon the prophet Christ. They might put him in that situation. But what does the Almighty Muhammad teach us in one of the lessons? He said, why did we take Jerusalem from the Jews? He said, because they used the good name of our brother Jesus Christ. He called it, this is what they dirty religion called Christianity. But this is what Almighty Muhammad taught us. So here we now, we have an opportunity to make a choice. Because we didn't have no choice. We didn't have the opportunity to make no choice then, Brother Mel. And this is what I like about you, Brother Mel. So you keep it right in our face, man. And what they do is, how did they enslave us through religion? So God bless you to see and understand to use a word. Because words make people. You say religion means a lie. Now, when you hear that, you ain't gonna just keep walking away, and that ain't gonna, it's gonna register on you one day. If it don't register on you, perhaps it's gonna register on your great grandson or daughter, because somebody gonna hear it. Because it is religion, Imam Muhammad says, Brother Imam, it is religion that rules the world. He said, we are so far behind everybody else. That's when he first came on office. He said, we're so far behind everybody else. He said, how do we catch up? He said, through religion. And that's what Ali said, through religion. Why? Because religion rules the world. So you come with a program, so religion means a lie. Now, how are you going to hear that? And we're looking at our history, and this is supposed to be Black History Month here, Brother Man. And we see, we ponder and say, how we get caught up in this situation like this here? We weren't like this. We didn't have this kind of disturbance in our heart, our soul, and our mind before something happened. It was a group of people that didn't look like us, captured many of our ancestors and took them from their comfortable identity. They didn't have no problem. They didn't have no identity problem. They knew who they were, and they had a religion. They had a culture. They had tradition of their own. Now, this was through over 400 years of working on the heart, the soul, the mind, and the spirit of those people. They made a new people. We're a new people. We're a new people. That's what the imam said, and I think, and you heard him, Brother Imam, because you're doing exactly what he asked us. He said, if he can get the imams to do. He said, if I can get these imams with me, who can get our people and convince them that we are a new people, then, Brother Man, we will make great progress. And we are, it was a religion. A religion made us a new people here in America, because that we're not a people without history in this country.
That's right.
Muhammad said, when he went overseas, Brother Man, he was referring to us as African and American. Those scholars, they really didn't know who he was talking about. He said they don't look at us as African American. They look at us as the indigenous Americans, buddy. Now, that's what we are. He said from now on, when I write books, I'm gonna have to put that in my book. The indigenous. We got a name now, brother man. Because the unorganized Muhammad, brother man, you know this here. You know the name Shabazz. That Imam Muhammad came, he said, listen, we made great progress because on the night Muhammad tried to give us a name. He said, listen, we the tribe of Shabazz. But that's a mythological idea. Like
yes,
Imam
sir.
Said, all people get their start in mythology. Like European,
right.
The reason why they call themselves Roman, they were named after two brothers that belonged to that tribe, Romulus. And they were raised by two wolves. This is how their story goes. That's why they love dogs so much. So they were raised by two wolves, and they took on the name. And I've seen statues, and I looked on TV, I've seen a lot of the history. They got statues around this country in America where a statue of a dog with two little boys sucking on the breast of that animal. So they love this here. They love this here animal because they believe that animal had a great part in them becoming a part of a country of the world and a great city in the world, because the wolf is known for great unity and family life. So when we look at our family, Billy, man, how are we going to talk about Black history and not include the honor of Elijah Muhammad and Imam? That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous, because Chicago, they named the honor of Elijah Muhammad one of the 100 most influential citizens of that country. Now, here's a little man that stood up and called all white folks the devil, brother man. Even a little unborn baby is the devil. But look at the respect they gave him. I was just reading a book yesterday. You know, Muhammad said they wrote into the honor of Elijah Muhammad, many white people, and asked them to let them join his organization, but it wasn't meant to be, because the honor of Elijah Muhammad, when those Arabs who say they knew the Quran, when they came to the Chicago, I mean big scholars, they tried to convince the honor of Elijah Muhammad that he wasn't teaching Islam, and the honor of Elijah Muhammad simply told him, said, brother, you don't know my people like I do. That's what he told him, buddy man. And this is what's going on. This is what is going on in the world today, brother man. Brother man, we can't allow these foreigners to come here and try to teach us.
That's right.
What kind of, brother man? You remember? You know, me and you used to before we got real tight. Every time I used to see you, I used to say, brother man, I said, brother Alvarez, what's going on, man? And it's like, and this is what you always would tell me. He said, man, these emails, man. These guys ain't with me, I'm telling you, honey. And you call out a few names to me, and I take that for not to be. But I listen to you, and I begin to watch a lot of those ones that you pointed out to me, and it turned out they're among the ones. But now, when Imam Muhammad came to River State Make Park, He did something that Muhammad the prophet, peace be upon him, did not do it in the history. We don't see a prophet doing this here. You might say, well, what is that, Brother Mubashir? Imam Muhammad, he declared jihad on the people, on those imams who were talking about that with his Sahaba, Brother Imam.
Yes, sir.
You were there. Imam W. D. Muhammad, he said, I'm not declaring jihad on the white man. He said, the white man has embraced me. He has accepted me. He said, it's you imams of this community. I'm declaring jihad on you because you have worked against me. Now, Brother Mel, how can we still hear people come on and talk about we got to be accepted here and there? The imams today have accepted him. They accepted the imam. Because how do we know that? All we got to do is look what the name they gave him. They say he's the American imam. So what more do we need, Brother Mel? And the religion that Imam Muhammad represents, what you represent, Brother Mel, that's what I'm part of. That's what we are, Brother Mel. That's what brought us to where we are today, Brother Mel, because we have a chance to hear two figures in our life more than any other people to tell us about another religion. And that was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his son, Imam Wafid Muhammad. And Imam, you know the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told in Washington, D.C. in the 50s, to me and my son is like David and Goliath. He says, I'm going to gather the material, and what? My son going to build the temple. That's what he told me. And that happened in your lifetime, Brother Mel. That happened in my lifetime. That happened in the lifetime of any African-American man or woman that say they was an FOI and an MGT.
Yes, sir. I thank you so much for those comments. I look forward to seeing you at Savior's Day on February the 20th at the Robert Creed Hotel. And
that's going to be a good
day. Our host, Brother James Holloway, who was interviewing me today, and I want to thank you for your comments. Brother James, you had any other questions or comments? Appreciate you and love you dearly, Brother Imam.
No, you too, Brother Imam. Keep the good works up, Brother Imam.
Thank you, sir.
Yes,
sir,
Brother
James.
Yeah. Thank you for that. An awesome spiel, if you will. And when I say spiel, I'm not trying. I'm not.
I know what you're saying.
Anything that's being said. It's a very significant that we have you on, and we thank you for your presence. Thank you for your attitude of mind. That's the most important thing in this particular time. And as an elder in our community, we appreciate your work and the work that you continue to do. And anytime you need to be part of what we're doing, feel free. Imam Alfred Muhammad is here for your at your service, if you will. And my name is James Holloway once again, and I'm glad to be here.
It's good to meet you, my brother. I like your state of mind too. You're on point, man. You're on point.
Yeah, we're looking to do more. You know, with your help, we shall do it. Also,
Allahu Akbar.
Once again, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
Once again, you can peace and love. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you can join us at 805-727-7013. You can dial in and be a part of this discourse as we have just a few more moments with you, but we want to make impact because we are making impact, all right? Imam Muhammad.
Yes, sir.
Graciously speaking, man, you have such a grasp of history, man, a grasp of insight, and you come through two pillars of thought, if you will, you know, from the first resurrection up until now under the teachings of Imam Wafid Muhammad. Talk to us as you have been about what really challenged your spirit relative to Imam Wafid Muhammad and his message to call us into doing greater things.
Brother James, that is a phenomenal question. I must tell you, first of all, I'm Virgil Mae Desmond's boy, and I was called to preach as a young man in the church, and I was highly spiritual, but something interrupted that spirituality because I had a daddy named Joseph Booker, born in Buckingham County, the same county that Cottage Woodson was born in. My grandmother was from Appomattox County, which was the county that slavery ended. My father, who happened to be born in the county of Buckingham County, perhaps even a Caucasian's grandson, he hated that and had a lot of railing against it, and he was a socially conscious person. My mother was spiritual and was not interested in race, was really a true Christian of the 50s and the 40s. So she was basically interested in the next world and her children and her church. That was her life. My daddy was very interested in the life of our people and our freedom. So I came up very confused and torn. And when I was about 13 years, so I preached in the church, I listened to great preachers like God the Taylor, Marty Carr Johnson, Vernon John, and many other great preachers. But at that point, I was torn again because I joined the Nation of Islam and stayed in briefly, 1960, but also I got drawn into the civil rights movement and found myself really catching my stride as a preacher under a man by the name of Willie Ricks. I met and hung out with most of Dr. King's lieutenants, Y.T. Walker, the Reverend C.T. Vivian, the Reverend Virgil Alexander Woods, and many others. I knew Reverend Jesse Jackson before he was even an ordained preacher. I met Reverend Shopton before he was even an activist. He was Alfred. Some people, when they see us at conferences, call him Big Little Al and me Big Al. So I had that spiritual thing, but still I was torn because something about Christianity was talking to Christianity in the 50s and the 40s was really talking about the next world. Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement started talking about civil rights. They didn't talk much about religion, but they talked about the civil rights, and that became a part of my religion. They took the spiritual thing. But I still was torn. Because I didn't think that they were talking about practical stuff. So I joined the Nation of Islam. While I was in the Nation of Islam, I was still torn. I was between piddle and post. The Nation of Islam didn't teach Dr. King, and kind of a lot of people that made fun of him didn't like Dr. King, so I was torn. So when this wise leader who synthesized the best of Dr. King and the best of the Nation of Islam and the best of our tradition and started talking about African-American history and Du Bois and all the people who I had repressed, the Cruises and Howard K. Thurman, I felt like a whole person. And I also felt like I was interested not only in preaching a religion but building a people. And that's kind of the difference between me and most Muslims you can contact with. I am informed by al-Islam, but I don't have to mention it every word, every paragraph, because it's my life. But I can relate to James Holloway. I can relate to the Ndugus. I can relate to the Kwame this one and Kwame that one, because I understand when you're building a people, you have all kinds of religions. My foundation is al-Islam. I don't hide it one bit. My name is Imam Alfred. But I learned to translate it to the person who may be a cultural nationalist. Some people are just economic nationalists. I have a friend of mine came by the house. All he wants to talk about is economics. But I know that it all is together. It's all related. But you have to understand that some people have a different focus. So religion means alive. Came from a speech that Imam Muhammad gave in May of 1975, where he said, we are going to build a new world. We're a new people. He said, we're going to come out with a newspaper that will first knock out the Chicago Sun-Times. Then we go over that and knock the Washington Post out. Then we go from there and knock the New York Times out. I still have that vision in my mind, in my spirit, in my body. I have the spirit of us being the leader, not only of African America, of the world. In America, I believe that we should have African American presidents one after another, as long as they got the new mind. I'm not excited about a Bernie Sanders. I'm not excited about a Hillary Clinton. I would be excited about a live mind like Brother Ndugu. I would be excited about a man that's a political man like Brother Imam Mubashir. These are the people that should be running for people who are new men, who have a new spirit, a new will to build a new people. First, a new people, then a new America. We can't have the America of Donald Trump, even the America of Bill Clinton. We have to have a new America that really becomes a perfected union. It's not going to try to set up police shops in every place in the world. It's going to correct the wrongs that have been done in the world and give every man, woman, and child a right to the tree of life. That's my politics.
Very well said. You know what's really fascinating about this discussion and kind of being put on the spot, so to speak, in a good sense of it, is that you bring such vibrancy, such insight, such a nurturing kind of a spirit to what we're doing this evening. And it's so important because, you know, as people say, these are troubled times and these are dreadful days and that sort of thing. But I'd like to say that these are powerful times because we have powerful people in our midst, if you will. You know, they germinate and they generate and they give us an exactness as to the path that we need to follow and the path that we need to venture off into. You know, as you said earlier in our discussion, and I like that, you said we have to be a people that is determined to go on its own, you know, not to be by ourselves, but to determine what we need to do for ourselves, you know.
For ourselves, we have enough energy, repressed energy, to lead the world for at least 1,000 years. That's how much depressed energy we have. But we have to believe it. We have to encourage each other. We have to push each other. I told my son yesterday, he said, son, I'm very hard on you. And you think I'm not, because I'm coaching you to be a world champion. I'm coaching you to compete with the Indians, the Chinese, everybody. And whatever they're doing, I want you to do it and do it better. And here's what I believe, Brother Ndugu. If we can win on the baseball diamond, and we are, if we can win in the boxing ring, we are. If we can win on the tennis court, and we are. If we can win on a game we didn't know anything about, golf. We used to be caddies ago. They knocked Tiger down. I know the wood been knocked down. I know he's been acting like an alley cat, but that's okay. We're going to master that. That's a sign to me from God that we can master leadership and business. That we will have just a job to somebody make us the president of the Toyota, and I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the great Ken Chenault. I'm proud of the Reginald Lewis. But I would be prouder when the North Carolina Mutual Insurance Company become a $100 billion insurance company. I'll be proud when we have banks that will be $100 billion. When Carver National Bank and City National be $1 billion, when African Americans have a massive bank in and say, I'm going to go to TC Bank, I ain't going to knock the bank because maybe my bank or somebody else's bank. I don't want to get in trouble with them. But why can't we have a mass ride and everybody take their accounts out and put them in a black bank, take their insurance and transfer it to a black corporation? And man, that's the day. That's the kind of movement. If I had the authority that Minister Farrakhan had, you would see a $1 trillion economy overnight. If I had 1 million people supporting me, I tell you, people would be coming asking us for jobs. We wouldn't be begging for jobs. The African American institutions, the Claflins, the Allen universities would have billions of dollars in which to have. We'd have 20 medical schools. We have medical schools in Newark. We have medical schools in Elizabeth making doctors and competing, demanding that we get our share. They say they closed the hospitals down. How in the hell are you going to close hospitals down and you don't let us have the right to own hospitals? These are some of the public demands we should make. We need some of that pension fund money. I'm for us having a full-fledged seat at the table. And I'm talking about pulling up to the table and eating a four-course meal. I'm not going to go to the McDonald's or the table and be a beggar at Bernie Sanders' table, a beggar at Hillary Clinton's table, the beggar at Donald Trump's table, the beggar at George Bush's table. I want to be at the table myself. And anybody try to block me, I tell them I'm the senior citizen of America. Been here since 1619. Get the hell out of the way. I'm coming at the table. I'm sitting down as an equal, not as a beggar.
Like I said, I love your passion, Imam Alfred Muhammad, and I just want to thank you for this evening's opportunity to be on the platform.
Well, let me put a bag down before I go. These shows cost money. Some people, my enemies, they lie and they tell people, oh, Alfred is making rich off that. I'm getting rich off this. But I must tell you that these shows cost money. Blog Talk, Mr. Alan Green, I believe his name is Alan Goldberg, whatever his name. But he owns this company. This is a multi-million dollar corporation. But they don't give me time for free. And I have to pay for this. And through your donations and through the board loans I made for my family, we're on the air. So I have a secure way you can donate to me. Send it to imamalfred@gmail.com or religionmeansalive@gmail.com. PayPal it. All you got to do is go to your credit card and send me $20. If I can get me 500 people to send me $20, we could buy time on BLS, LIB, other radio stations so we can reach a wider audience. I guarantee you, if you could put me full, 500,000 people, I guarantee you that we will have 500 businesses open, 500 young men would be transformed. There will be less murder in our community. There will be more family unity. There will be more entrepreneurship. There will be more cooperation between Christians, Muslims, and others among African Americans. My mission is not for anybody else. I ain't going to lie to you. Caucasian listening, sure, God bless you. Indian listening, God bless you. Anybody else listening, God bless you. But this program is exclusively for the upliftment of African Americans, particularly in here in the United States of America, but also to include those from Rio de Janeiro, who I know down in South America suffering psychologically.
Down
Central
in Brazil,
America,
of course, with
suffering.
Brothers in Brazil and from long
yeah,
over the continent.
Yeah,
wrong
with
it.
They are thought
know,
of as nothing but black and dark and dirty monkeys.
Right.
So this mission is for them. We're eventually going to have an app where they can translate and listen to Religion Means Alive in that language.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to work on them, too. But we're here to raise up the black man of the Western Hemisphere. I know say, oh, the black man. No, I understand the term, but the new African, whatever you want to call it. The reason I use black, because most people know that language. Till we change that language, we got to use what the people understand. But I'm here for new people. Don't critique me so hard. Just work with me and send your donations to us. And those of you who are here on the East Coast or coming, you should come to Savior's Day. I'm going to make some brief, maybe 10-minute comments. But I will be at the Savior's Day. Freedom and justice is a bridge to peace, I believe it is. But I'll be there. I'm probably going to have bells on, but you'll know me. And I also have a table, and perhaps, Brother Ndugu, we can have this tape available for sale. We have the DVDs and CDs, and I'm hoping you will work with us and others will work with us to make this the most powerful show on earth towards freedom, justice, and equality, for educational equality, for economic equality, for cultural equality, for governmental equality.
Wow, sounds like a plan. I think we're about to run out of time if we haven't really stepped over. Okay, so we want to close.
Well,
out,
we had plenty of time,
know,
but we got plenty of messages, but we closed out of time.
Yeah,
thanks,
yes,
Brother Dugu.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate you, man. Much love to you and the family, man. Keep doing the good work. And audience, we'll be talking to you soon. This has been James Holloway on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, joining Imam Alfred Muhammad from Religion Means Alive. We'll talk to you soon. Be well.